Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Spend my dollar.
It's not about what you want. It's about what you're willing to do to get it. Run it again.
Hello and welcome.
I'm not going to, so quit asking.
When you give me a hard time.
For the listeners that didn't get to go.
This is the payback.
Alabama wins!
What you did last year really doesn't matter.
Our goal is to have the kind of team that nobody wants to play.
All right.
Welcome back, Alabama football podcast fans. Man, have we got a super treat for you. I've got a good longtime friend of mine, Chad from Texas, longtime proud Texas A&M alum. He's a true Aggie through and through, and he knows his football program. We wish we knew our program as well as he knows the Aggies. And so we have just a treat in getting to understand sort of the mindset, the team, the roster for Texas A&M going into our trip down to College Station this weekend. Chad, glad to have you on with us tonight.
Well, really glad to be here, Dave. So thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, man, I'm going to jump in and maybe I'm going to take advantage of the fact that we're friends for so long and maybe start with some of the harder questions. I typically sort of, you know, build those up or sort of layer those in, but I'm just going to jump in the deep end and sort of wade us through this. What, you know, there's a pair of losses here that Texas A&M has had. And so talk about the mindset, the team, the fan base, as we sit here in first part of October, still a lot of season left. You know, 4-6 weeks ago, you guys had a different probably perspective on the season. And what's sort of the mindset of the team and just across the fan base in general?
Yeah, honestly, I've got a big, like a cartoon, a big question mark during these football games, what's going on. But certainly we plan to be undefeated going into this matchup, you know, and it has not worked out that way. And so I joke with people that we are so unlucky, we've literally lost 5 coin tosses. I mean, nothing has gone our way this year. But again, those are excuses. We've had a lot of injuries. We had 14 players out against Arkansas, including 6 starters on offense. You know, we had 9 out last week and, you know, again, another 4 or 5 starters on offense and we're struggling. And cannot seem to put a finger on it. Everything that worked in the past and that is supposed to be your identity is just not there. And so there's definitely a big struggle. I think in the fan base, you've got different factions. You've got some people that are panicking, right? And you've got some other people that are, you know, sort of a little bit more even keeled going, okay, we've got to figure this out. But, you know, let's be realistic. It doesn't matter what your heart is. Your mind tells you, we just lost to the 2 teams that you kind of planned to be at the bottom of the SEC West. And we just lost to them. So, and now you get your treat is to play Alabama. So that part is a little tough. Right. And so I think the team can always react in different ways. I'm hoping that the team is sort of, hey, our back's against the wall. We've got to come back together and step up and see. And so I'm anxious to see how they will respond. You know, they're frustrated. Mississippi State was very effective in ball control, right? I didn't expect that. A&M got the ball 4 times in the second half. That's it. We scored 3 out of 4, but we just didn't get the ball. And so that part is very, very frustrating. So I think there's probably some soul searching amongst the coaching staff and the players and trying to regroup. But within a fan base, people are all over, right? But there's definitely questions. Everything that you had expectations that were very high. You know, you just missed the playoffs last year. You felt very good about things. Again, you're stacking class after class. You feel good about things. But we have been ravaged with injury this year, more than any team that I've I've seen in a long time. And losing a starting quarterback has been pretty devastating for us, because we've literally probably had the worst quarterback play I've seen in, you know, 2 decades. And it's tough as a fan base. The fans are, you know, a little frustrated, because when you're in the game in person, you can see the people, and there's open people everywhere. And he's really struggling to see the field. And, you know, I have a friend who's on the staff there, and he had told me a long time ago, he said he's got an NFL arm, but the mind's not there. And he doesn't process it fast enough. And he's just really struggling. And I think his confidence is low, and he just won't pull the trigger. He just will not fire the ball. And as a result, you miss people, and you know, you don't move the chains that way.
What do you think about the season? You know, the road not taken right. If Haynes King hadn't been injured, how different is the season? And that's a wishful sort of thought, but in a hypothetical, how much? Maybe another way of asking the question: how much of this do you put on Zach, or are there just multiple other factors as well?
So it's probably unfair. The quarterback always gets too much praise or too much criticism, but it is what it is. It would be tremendous. So Haynes King is this incredible athlete, right? He's literally the second fastest player on the A&M team. You need to realize that the fastest player was in the Olympic trials this year. And so Haynes King is your sub-4.4 electronic 40. So he's super fast. He's a coach's son. He's kind of been a legend in the Texas high school ranks. He's won state championship. Throws as pretty a deep ball as you will see. In the midst of, so you've got a kid who grew up, his son of a high school coach, one of the winningest coaches in the state of Texas, one of the biggest programs. He's a good decision maker. He's very fast and has a great deep ball. The expectations were very high. He literally got hurt the second drive of the second game. And so we didn't quite see everything we wanted, but I think the trajectory would have gone considerably different. The problem we've got right now is that literally the quarterback is not hitting open receivers, and he has an absolute cannon. So when you watch him on Saturday, when he's rifling the ball, there's a difference amongst big time quarterbacks, right? He would be plus side on the NFL with his arm strength. But the other issue is he is rifling the ball, whether you are 5 yards from him or 50 yards. Right now, A&M receivers are 1, 2, and 4 in the SEC in drop passes, including your All-American hopeful tight end, right? And so he's just drilling the ball at a short distance and not taking anything off of it. And so there's just so many missed opportunities. When you're watching the play, he really does not see anything in the hashes. And Jimbo runs a lot of plays that way. His best play is sort of a kind of on a delayed slant, right, from the outside and coming across. And that seems to be the only one he really sort of sees. He's struggling right now with seeing the field. And so you have to think that a lot would have changed differently if the starting quarterback were there. Now, in all fairness, too, our offensive line is just absolute beat up. We are now starting 2 18-year-old true freshmen, one at center and one at right tackle. And so that's not what the plan was. You know, your All-American lineman, Kenyon Green, has literally played 4 positions already, 3 in 1 game. And so he's also literally moving from the left side to the right side. And he's made some uncharacteristic mistakes. And I'm not surprised, right? I practiced it at right tackle, and now I'm over at left guard or wherever it may be. And so he's literally moving all over the field. I'm not quite sure. From drive to drive, I actually humor him just checking where he is, but we're having to plug some holes, and there are areas where deep. We walked into the season with 2 areas on offense. Okay, well, we've got an unproven quarterback, we've got an unproven offensive line, and we've known our wide receivers were the weakest group. And then in those areas, we've even been ravaged a little bit more with injury than when one would expect to receive, and so there's a lot on the quarterback, but the team has to step up. The defense isn't playing as well, and I think part of that is residual. But the players are a little frustrated. They're open, they're not getting the ball. You know, there's been some less than positive body language maybe during the game from the receivers. They're coming back, but I there's got to be a point where everybody gets in the room and says, okay, we've got to turn it around. And so I'm hoping to see part of that this week, even if it doesn't yield in victory. My goal is that we come out with an identity and we say, this is who we are. And we're going to do this. And so we've got to work on finding that identity. And then I want to see that build upon each other week to week.
It's a leading question. I found myself in a conversation with a Texas high school football coach, and they were studying a lot of film, and including some A&M film. And some of the sort of perspective that they found is that it looked like there may be some gaps in play calling, or at least the schematics, not putting in people in motion to have the defense sort of reveal what they're doing, maybe not moving the pocket. And I'm sort of remembering, you know, from a conversation, but do you see that type or is it just physically the skill set's not there? And even with any scheming, that's not helping. What's sort of your read on that?
So I've got a few plays. I'd say I see a little bit of difference of what maybe they're seeing. And I made a comment to a buddy of mine. We were watching, say, the Arkansas game. It's like, I can see how a coach can get so frustrated. So we had a specific play where, and against Alabama every year, we typically run one play in the red zone with a player that is never factored, right? And so we've scored with a guy making his first score of the year. And again, just planning on the other team, not scheming for them. So Against Arkansas, we drop back. There's a lot of action on the field side, which is on the right side. And we throw a backside screen to 42. He's our backup tight end. He converted from defensive end. So he's a good athlete, but, you know, and literally what had happened on the play is the field side corner fell. And so Catalan, the safety, has turned his back and is sprinting to cover a deep post. And so, and literally he throws it backside, and all he has to do is he catches it, he turns up, and he could walk 40 yards. Because there's literally just the way things lined up, you couldn't have planned it to work out any better. Now, he's a tight end. He probably wouldn't have made it all the way. But you're a minimum play, and he bobbles the ball four times. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and then he managed to stammer, and you know, he gets about 11 yards. And we move the chains. But it's like you literally could have just walked for 40. I mean, there was just no one in sight. And we've got a lot of plays when you're watching that you look at someone, and he's just not making the right read. And he doesn't hit it quickly. So that route that 7 yards that breaks open, and you've got a small window in college, right? And so you can't wait for a high school window. And he's not pulling the trigger then. And then I think it's in his head so much that he's holding the ball too long and he's taking sacks, or he's just not moving the chains. But I don't know. I think that one of our weak spots in talent is receiver, and we're not getting enough separation. We had this problem last year, right? And so we've got to get a little bit better separation in that. But I actually think scheming, we're pretty good. What Jimbo generally will do is he's drawing someone across. He loves to – he'll take someone across the face of the safety, and he'll move people out of his route. And so that's what Jimbo's sort of known for. And then he'll bring someone in behind, right? It's not uncommon. People do it, but that is sort of his favorite action on the field. And so he does a lot of that, but we're not pulling the trigger to hit it. And so generally the way Jimbo will operate is you will see our receivers, somebody's going to clear everything out, and someone's coming in from behind. So I can tell you right now, you will see in key situations, we'll clear out somebody, and then he will run. It's an entry. I was kind of sort of a delayed slant. That's not what it really is, but we'll bring it from way outside all the way across. And then he will hit that pass quite a bit in key situations. It is a sort of a favorite third down call that Jimbo has. And so you can look to see that in those types of spots. But he will generally try to clear someone out and bring someone else right behind it.
So the you know, I'm thinking about Arkansas and sort of the zone that Odom likes to run, almost like an umbrella zone. They'll drop, you know, 6, 7, 8 folks. Seems you know, potentially, and you watched that game much more closely than I did. But is that sort of the wrong recipe for that style of defense? Man to man, it might be easier to clear someone out in that way, but in sort of a zone like that, is that did you find that was some of the frustration?
I think so, but really in that game in particular, it was a quarterback that just was rattled, and I think things went wrong early, and he just never regrouped, but mentally he was struggling there. I don't know why that game in particular, you know, he could not see anybody on the hash marks, you know, and we, you, that's an open spot right in that zone. Yeah. They were sitting at, and he couldn't see him. And then for some reason he couldn't see the outlet either, you know, the safety valve. And so he was really struggling on it. And so I think that dropping eight and making a kid that doesn't process things very quickly, I think that was a great recipe to confuse him. And so it didn't matter what else was going on in that game in particular. They were just sitting in zones and our guys were open because they can't cover the whole field. Right. Yeah. And he just couldn't see it. And so that part was a little bit more troubling from our side.
Is anyone in your circle or sort of the fan base that you're plugged into, anyone comment that Zach Calzada looks like a young Jimbo Fisher?
No, nobody said that. That's kind of funny. I've got to look at that again.
I see it especially in the eyes. That's what you know. I see in Calzado in the helmet, sort of at the line of scrimmage. It was the eyes that really set it off, you know. And then they cut the Jimbo on the sideline. Now, obviously, there's the age difference and sort of the all that goes with that. But I was like, damn it, there's some similarity there.
That's so funny.
You have to check that out. I may have ruined something for you. I don't know, but
no. That's going to be funny. That's good.
Talk to me about, and look, I'm going to specifically say non-quarterback. When I say skill position, some of the players that A&M has skill personnel, I think I would put them, and you can knock me off my rocker for saying this. I think I'd put some of these guys against you know anybody in the country. I like the running backs, Spiller and A-Chain. I like the Aeneas Smith, and he's a little bit of a hybrid receiver, mm-hmm. Running back type guy. Desmond Demas, you know, he I know he's a second team guy, it looks like, but I mean he's got all kinds of talent. And then Jalen Wattemeyer, or holy cow, he is just a treat to watch. He's like a tight end's tight end. And when I look at the skill personnel. And we can talk about the defense, especially the front four as well. But when I look at your skill personnel, I think I just about put them up against anybody, and they're super fun to watch. There's a couple of these guys I definitely wish Alabama had recruited or won in recruiting. Talk about some of the skill personnel, what you see, and maybe I just see them with sort of shiny eyes, and you see them more on a day-to-day basis. What am I overlooking? And talk about really how good some of them really are.
Well, you hit on the big four, and for A&M at this point, from an identity, we've got to focus on the big four, meaning Spiller, A-Chain, Aeneas Smith, and Wattemeyer getting the ball. Spiller has really surprised me on how well he has developed as a running back, and at this point, he's just our best football player on offense. Yeah. We've got to get the ball into him, and so I honestly, if I could game script. Is that we would establish the run and be successful, because that's the only way we're going to be able. You know, we've got a quarterback that's not ready for the deep waters and for the SEC, right? And he's, God gave him enough talent to be a college quarterback, but he's just not a Division I. He's not an SEC quarterback. You know, it's just not working for him yet. And he would be perfect for a backup quarterback, but we've got to get the ball to Spiller. Spiller is really surprised me on how special he is. And so he does a very good job of setting it up. He's got a little gimpy ankle, so he'll usually have to come out a little bit. But I'm not sure that the most talented person might not be number six, A-Chain. So A-Chain ran the Olympic trials this year. I don't know if you know this, but he was an All-American sprinter this year. You know, as this last year as a freshman. In addition to just being he's a big play specialist. I would also tell you that A-Chain and Aeneas Smith both probably have about eight returns of 30 to 45 yards that have been called back this year. Mm-hmm. So statistically on the return game, you know, it's very frustrating, but because we don't seem to be able to do a return without a penalty, but they're very special. But A-Chain has elite speed. He's also got a pretty good strength. So if you remember that Orange Bowl play where he had the really long run and, you know, he got hit several times and just – He has enough strength to get through there. Those guys are absolutely fun to watch. So Spiller's is a very good running back. A-Chain is a very good running back. The one that is very unique is Aeneas Smith, and he is a very strong leader. So you would want 22 of him if you could get him in your locker room. So he's the guy. Last year, you know, there was a lot of discussions on social justice. There was a lot of things on, hey, are people going to play? He's the guy that then a sophomore stood up and said, we're here to play football. We're going to focus on that. There's things outside we'll deal with outside. But when you walk in here, we're a football team. We're going to play football, and that's our focus, and we're going to get better. And he is he's been the leader internally with the team to get them focused. And so he is the perfect teammate, the perfect leader, and he's just really exceptional with the ball. His quickness is amazing, right? The old phrase, he's hard to tackle in a phone booth. I mean, I don't know what he sees, because I watch him and I'm like, what did he see? What to make him cut and do that? I have no idea. And so he's a lot of fun to watch. And then Weidemeyer has just been a beast. And that's the guy who's had a lot of success against Alabama in the past. And last year, you know, an All-American. Now, he is struggling this year, by the way. He is leading the SEC in drop passes, which is very uncharacteristic because he has amazing hands. And so I'm hoping this is his get right game. And again, part of it is, it's, you know, he's getting a cannon. I mean, if you're watch the zip on the ball, you know, it is amazing how strong an arm he has. And he probably Calzada probably has the strongest arm in the SEC, but it is up close. It's almost not catchable. And so these guys are really struggling with it. And he's got to take some off on these short to, you know, the intermediate to long routes. Let's bring the cannon, but he's got to take some off there. But Weidemeyer is a lot of fun to watch. If you need to play, you know, he is absolutely who, you know, I would go to, and he's done very well. But all those four guys right there from a skill position are as good as anything. Now, the young guy, Damon Demas, he's a redshirt freshman this year. He was the elite five-star in ability. Didn't get to play his high school senior year just due to he had transferred and they ruled him ineligible. He struggled a little bit with the playbook, but he's got the exceptional ability. He's the one I really want to see us utilize in a vertical passing game a lot more. So, and he's the future. So he's a guy to sort of watch out for. If he puts things together with his athletic ability, you know, he'll play on Sundays. So he'll be a lot of fun to watch in the future. But currently, that foursome of Spiller, Achane, Aeneas Smith, and Weidemeyer, they're worth the price of admission. They're really a lot of fun to watch.
With the Demas, didn't he catch that long first pass of the season for Haynes King?
So no, that was Caleb Chapman. So Caleb Chapman is Caleb Chapman is also the one who caught the deep pass against Florida last year. And Chapman is injured and he's not playing. He's not played the last two games and he's not due to play Saturday either. Chapman is ahead of him. So Demas is having to start by default, but A&M has three of their top four wide receivers have not played in the last 2 weeks. And I don't think any are planning to come back this week either. So we're having to. So Demas is going to get playing time. So hopefully for us, he's get some dynamic play. He's also the one, unfortunately, literally second play of the game. We hit Demas. He bobbled the ball. You know, he didn't catch it. It knocks it straight up in the air. Mississippi State intercepts it, and boom, they've got the ball inside our 20. So okay. He's working. He's very inconsistent right now, but the ceiling is very high. And so he's a kid that you just hope if he reaches that ceiling, it's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
All right. Well, you know, you wouldn't expect it. You mentioned Jalen Weidemeyer. I'm going to always mispronounce his last name, but he's one of my favorite players on your roster. But you mentioned hope this is a get right game. And on the surface, you think, well, playing Alabama, how's that going to be a get right game? But playing, you know, the Alabama defense is almost this was true last year, and I've seen it be true this season as well, is almost a tonic for tight ends. We've played two opponents this season who had zero receptions at the tight end position going into our game. And I think I think one was six and one was eight receptions at the position coming out of the game. So, yeah, I would expect Jalen definitely get a number of targets and probably a couple of key first downs, a couple of big plays for you.
Well, and I also think just, again, you know, you and I grew up playing sports. There's something about playing the number one team. And if you are – winners win, right? And so – and guys that are big-time players – have to step up against bigger opponents. Weidemeyer has had better, has had his better games in the bigger the moment. And so I expect that generally from your better football players, and it doesn't matter. And so, you know, you guys have the intrigue of being the, you know, you're in the midst of an unparalleled dynasty, right? And so you're number one on everyone's schedule, regardless whatever the rankings are. And generally, sure, you're number one there too. But let's just be honest. So everyone's gunning for you, right? And so you want to make a play against Alabama. And right. So I think there's part of that. So for somebody, just the way your defense lends itself and where you're amazing at your ability to cover sort of that dump off pass, that swing pass to the right. But I think because your defense is so good and your pass rush is so good that you're naturally geared toward covering that flat and that outlet, that really to attack Alabama, it's your best shot is middle of the field, on a route. And when you watch you guys play, that's the open spot. It's hidden in the hash marks, and that's where you're vulnerable. And I say that because you're just unbelievable everywhere. So you can't cover the whole field. You got to leave one field. But most people don't like to go there because usually that safety coming up, he introduces himself. But that's the spot. You cover that flat better than anyone else that I've seen. And again, your pass rush, you know, a lot of people are having to just dump it off there. They're worried about their internal clock ticking, so they're dropping that. You cover that because you see that probably more than anyone else does. Yep. Year in, year out. So, but your spot that you leave open is around the hash. And so that's why if you're going to play Alabama, you need to use the tight end.
Yeah. And that can be a harder throw, right? Over the middle of the field, seeing over the linemen, a lot of traffic. A lot of hesitant quarterbacks, you know, won't make that pass.
Yeah, your defensive linemen aren't exactly 5'10". they're coming in with their arms up high. And I'm going to tell you right now in advance where A&M is really struggling. Where I'll tell you exactly where your defensive coordinator is going to blitz more than he normally does if he's watching the same games I've been watching for A&M. But we have a beast of a prospect, our center. Is an amazing freshman, right? Bryce Foster is a five-star. Mm-hmm. He's actually a U.S. Olympic hopeful in the shot put. Good athlete, big kid, you know, about 335, you know, as an 18-year-old, right? Just strong muscle. But due to injury, he came in to play guard, and he's having to play center. And playing center as a true freshman in the SEC is not what coaches hope has to happen, particularly a kid that's never played center. And so – he is really struggling if you bring that pass rush right through the A gaps. And particularly if you're bringing two in there, he is struggling with that aspect. And that internal combination of guard, center, guard has not been picking that up very well. Mm-hmm. And again, a guy who's never snapped before, but had to game two, had to move into duty and start as an 18-year-old snapping the ball. And then he's with that pass rush, when he can see those two are coming in here, the snaps are coming out high. And so yeah, even if you don't come that route, but if you're flash there, that's been a weak spot. So I don't know how much you're blitzing in that gap, but do not be surprised if you see you doing that because one, we're struggling to do it. And two, you know, your defensive coordinator is licking his chops going, this kid at quarterback is really struggling. I'm not going to give him a whole lot of time.
Yep.
So I don't know. How much do you guys blitz in that gap generally, in the A gap?
Not a lot of blitzing up front. You know, not a lot of blitzing in the A gap. It's more of just straight up pass rush. I mean, we'll blitz some, but it's mostly off the edge. We'll bring maybe a delayed linebacker up the middle every once in a while, but mostly it's a corner or safety off the edge. And then with Will Anderson at one of the effectively a defensive end, lines up as a defensive end. We classify him as an outside linebacker, but he gets a lot of pressure just straight up. And so, you know, maybe less blitzing, but I think you're right. I think we attack that A gap. What's interesting is you know, our center, Darian Dalcourt, had a lot of sort of off the mark snaps Saturday. And when I think about your defensive front, I think about that potentially being a point of issue for us as well.
Yeah, our defensive front is the strength of our team. And so Number eight, DeMarvin Leal is a special player. And I think I told you last year I described him as an Alabama-type defensive lineman.
Yes.
You know, and he's just prototypical. I think he'll be a top 10 pick. I'm not an NFL GM, but he's just a freak of nature. So, you know, he's a legit 6'4", 6'5", 290. We're playing him at both defensive end and defensive tackle this year. We're kind of moving him around. He has great pass rushing ability. He definitely draws the scheme of any for protection, right? You're having to factor him in. And so he's a pretty special player. The other defensive end on the other side is actually pretty good. Number two, he was hurt last year. Clemens, he's very good on the pass rush. You know, he's about 275. We have a bunch of just really good-looking defensive linemen. There's a freshman named Shamar Turner that wasn't really supposed to make as big of an impact as he has, but he didn't understand the concept of waiting behind people. And literally his first play, you know, in his first college snap, he sacked the quarterback. And so he's done really well. You know, 35 McKinley Jackson is the guy in the middle that you're aware of from recruiting. He's very solid in the middle. Jaden Peavy, the big guy, is about 6'6". You know, all these guys are you know, Clemens is the lightweight at 275. Everyone else is somewhere around 290 to 300. And so we've got a lot of size up front. And so we do a very good job there. So from an attacking standpoint, we'll bring those guys in. Where we will blitz a lot is from the outside, from the corner, particularly our nickel. So 27 is the young special player. And he's fun to watch. He's a sophomore. He's going to play both nickel and safety. We lost our number three and number four safety. So our entire our two deep was lost for the season this week. And so he may have, you know, he may play a little safety, you know, this game as well, but he definitely is our nickel. And so we will bring 27 on a blitz a lot from the outside. But generally, Elko's going to try to get that pass rush with that front four. And that's because he can, right? And so much like you guys, right? You don't have to do a whole lot of blitzing. You can get so much penetration with that front four. And so he'll do that. And when we do blitz, we are more likely to bring our nickel than anyone else.
You know, I just want to call out and exactly what you're saying is spot on. And I just want to call out for the Alabama fans that the defensive front, that Texas A&M's defensive front looks like a defensive front, you know, should look. At the risk of this sounding, you know, sort of cocky, but it's the highest praise that I think I can give. They look like an Alabama defensive front. I mean, they're the first off the bus kind of guys. And then when they line up across the front four, there's an intimidation factor because they look like a defensive front should look. And then number eight, DeMarvin Leal, you got to watch him. He's such a treat to watch. I know he's going to be wearing the other team's colors, but we appreciate good football, and Leal delivers. So make sure you keep an eye out on number eight across our defensive front. Hopefully our guys are able to block him, but he's going to be something to watch, and we won't keep him quiet all day. He will make plays.
He will, and I mentioned to you last year that I think Jimbo has been greatly influenced by Saban, and so he is building his team in the trenches, you know, and particularly in defensive line. And so we formed a very Alabama looking defensive front, and that front four is pretty good. We will play 10 to 12 guys, and you won't see much of a drop off. And so we've got to that point. We'll probably rotate them in. We'll play 10 to 12 throughout the course of the game. But number eight is special.
Talk about the linebackers. You mentioned the DBs a little bit. Talk about the linebackers and what type of formations. Do you guys run a lot of nickel? Is it more base, very much dime? What sort of attack plans or formations do we expect from Elko?
So Elko has generally been multiple, with the exception of this year. Our second best player on defense might be our nickelback, and he's not going to get out of nickel. So he's got to keep 27. So number eight is generally the going to be the best defensive player, you know, by a mile for anyone, right? He's special. But number 27 has really, we the coaches talked about it last year as a freshman, and they just had to get him on the field and figure that out. And by this year, I would tell you that he's probably our second best player. And so we are just staying with the nickel in almost every formation. We're generally a 4-2-5. You know, we'll move a little bit and show different looks in situational football. But base is the 4-2-5 with our nickels making plays everywhere. And so it's a little uncommon. I'm not used to a nickel, you know, being one of your two leading tacklers. I don't know how he's everywhere, but he is. And we will bring him in a lot on pressure situations to flash in there. And again, it makes sense, right? He's not as far out wide. And we'll bring him in in a blitz situation in times. You guys will scheme it. It's not something we do that quite a bit. But he's pretty special, so we'll go with a base nickel on that. But going back to the linebackers, you know, Hansford is number one. He's not quite, Buddy Johnson from last year. And so he played. But the guy that's fun to watch is the, I don't know if they classify him as a sophomore or freshman with all the COVID, but there's a guy named Adrian Cooper that we recruited out of Louisiana. And Cooper has a lot of speed and absolutely delivers hits, and he's fun to watch. So Cooper is going to be one that you want to look for. You know, they're probably not the, they certainly don't get the glory that the defensive linemen do, and for good reason, right? But Cooper is going to be a very good player by the time he leaves. He's still young, but last year he played some special teams just because they were, a lot of seniors in front of him. But this year he's really making a lot of plays. He's fun to watch.
Just overall, and if there's anything that I've missed that you want to spend some time with, let's do that. But overall, what's your expectations for Saturday?
So Saturday is A&M has – so where Alabama has beaten A&M the last 2 years is you have killed us on third down. You know, we've had you in third and long, and you beat us over the top. And so I hope A&M is ready for that. I just hope we get you in third and long. Our defense had a little rough game last week. And so before, I was very proud of that, saying, well, our offense is struggling to find an identity, but we're okay with defense. And so we had a little rough week last week. And so hopefully they can bounce back on that. I think that we will focus on trying to stop the run and make you pass, which, by the way, could be a very – get what you asked for here, but A&M also just in the secondary. So our number one and our number three corner both had season ending surgery yesterday, by the way. And so we're now number 17, Jalen Jones is very good. He's a sophomore cornerback. Excellent. Started game one last year as a freshman, is really a strong player. We're having to trot out two freshmen, number seven and number 11, to play at this point just due to injury. So I expect Alabama to find 7 and 11. They're going to okay. Well, 17 is a pretty good corner, and I'm not saying he's going to be a lock everybody down, but you're going to find the true freshmen that are having to play because two of our top three corners just had season-ending surgery. So you're going to find those guys. And you should, right? That's how I would attack us. And so I'll be curious to see how we play. The coaches were very cautious in that they probably had us giving too much cushion against, we played too soft to coverage against Mississippi State because they were worried about freshmen getting beat deep. And then Mississippi State said, well, thank you. We'll just keep the ball. And it wasn't really the right recipe, but I know what the coaches were afraid of. So when we play Alabama, we too generally have beat us deep repeatedly. So I don't see any reason why you wouldn't try that again. And so we have two very good safeties, but they're not sub 4 or 5 guys. Right. And so they are better coming in and run support. I really like 26. He's a very good player. Number 9 is our other safety. He's just not he's not my favorite type of player. He's very braggadocious. There's a lot. Look at me. He's not very fast. He's probably about a 4.65. Maybe with the wind behind him, but he absolutely can hit. But he over pursues quite a bit. He's got some weaknesses on that. But they're good at coming up, but they're not as good going over the top and in coverage. So we're recruiting some of that. We're getting a lot more speed in the back end, I think we'll have to play another true freshman named Jardine Gilbert out of Louisiana this weekend, just to get us some more speed in the back. And basically we're running out of bodies. Right. And so you've lost your entire second team. You're going to have to probably play 27 in the back some, but you want to leave him at nickel just because he makes a big difference there. So I'll be curious how they do that, but you've been very good at attacking us with throwing the ball. So I kind of think Elko has generally against Alabama had made the principle of we're going to stop the run. We're going to sell out to stop the run, make them throw. And you made us pay. But that has been his past history every single matchup. And so I don't believe he's going to do anything different because he's felt very good about that. If he can stop the run, he feels that he can control the game a lot better. And that's sort of his coaching style. And I don't see him changing because he kind of does that every game. So I think that'll be his approach. If he can stop the run, he'll sell out to do that. And then he'll take his chances that we can not get beat over the top. But that's where we are suspect. If you have watched highlights of A&M chasing someone to the end zone, it's usually they were beat over the top on a long pass play. And that's a weak spot for us. And so I expect you to exploit it. And I expect you to say, where's these two true freshmen that are playing corner? Let's throw their way.
Yeah, let's get after them. Yeah, that makes sense. Accuracy over the top. Bryce Young is that's one of the areas that he has an opportunity to develop. We've hit a few of those, but he missed just a gaping wide open pass Saturday that would have been another nice touchdown against Ole Miss. But he's developing, and he's a treat to watch. And so again, he'll be playing against you, but I've enjoyed watching him play and develop. And keep an eye on him. I think he'll be a fun one to watch. I normally give you an easy one, to get out on, but I'm going to throw this at you. I remember we talked about this last year. And so, maybe this is a question that I keep bringing up until there's some movement on it. What is across, either you personally or across the fan base, what's the level of frustration or concern with Jimbo Fisher? He's been there a while now. He's definitely said some things that we've heard about how he was going to beat Saban, and got really close to the playoffs last year. Like you said, a lot of talent on this team, and then just for circumstances such that they are, it's not all coming together. But what's sort of the level of frustration or anxiety with Jimbo there in College Station?
If anybody is close to the program, they are in love with Jimbo. The people that are on the ancillary that are more your panic types and are going to change their mind every hour, they're showing the frustration. And I call them 20-year-old in your internet warriors, right? And they're most of those guys are the ones who never played football or any sports and don't realize it's legal to be behind and trail in a game. Right. And have to work to come back. The difference of Jimbo Fisher versus what we've had in the past is stark. And Jimbo Fisher is basically Nick Saban years ago. Now, again, they're very similar in style. It's all toughness, grit, determination. It's very strong. The culture has completely changed. The recruiting and what he's stacked class after class with talent, it's very different. I don't know how much you watch some of these high school games on ESPN, but again, the number one quarterback in the country is that Weigman kid out of the Houston area. He's he's the number one quarterback. He's a top five baseball prospect, but he's actually graduating early. He's going to play college football. That's what his dream is. He just happens to be one of the best baseball prospects in the country as well. And so by coming aboard in January, he will not be eligible for the draft. So he's very, very talented. But the way we brought in people, again, he's bringing in, basically a very similar recipe that he learned from Saban. He's bringing in like six defensive linemen every class, right? And so the defense is just literally stacked on top of each other in what he's got there. What he's built internally is very strong. Now, again, last year we were 9-1. Obviously you guys – took us to the woodshed and continued to beat us deep. So that was frustrating. But overall, after that, we dominated every game before and after. Yep. We just smash mouth football. We controlled the game. And we were always the toughest team. That's why this year is an anomaly. It's a little strange. Everything that he has been building towards, you know, it's just not happening this year. And so are the injuries playing that much? Is the lack of a quarterback or an offensive leader, is that what's doing it? I don't know. I've got question marks over my head. I've got more questions than I have answers, because this team, again, just so you guys know, A&M was the number one defense in the SEC last year and number nine, you know, in the country. We returned 19 of our top 22 players, right, yeah, on defense. So we were expecting basically to just dominate on that side of the ball this year. And it's still stronger. We hadn't quite dominated like we thought we were going to. And then offensively, we're just struggling on identity. And when you're losing offensive linemen right and left, you lose your starting quarterback. I get that we're struggling on an identity, but I was expecting expecting more. Probably the only gap I have in Jimbo is that he should have had a better backup quarterback. So our third team transferred, I get it. We just don't have anybody really behind Calzada. So everything we're chips in with Kane's King. And then we had the next two quarterbacks are fantastic, right? And you know, nationally ranked and that you're expecting to play. But we had a few years in here where we just didn't have good quarterback recruiting evidently. And there's somebody, they're just not ready. So, you know, again, he's allowed not to be perfect. And that's probably the one thing he'd like to redo, right? But overall, if you're anywhere inside the program or near the inside of the program, it is absolutely fantastic, because he's just transformed the culture tremendously. And the way he's dominating on the recruiting trail, for the state of Texas, he's doing much better than any of his predecessors have done. And so he's really doing well. So if you're close to the program, you're a huge fan. And so you asked me last year, and I know there were some, you know, again, we live in a state where the A&M doesn't have a journalism school, and our arch rival does. And so they're the ones writing the articles, right? And so it's their graduates. And so there's quite a bit, oh, he's making so much money. And it's like, well, he's fourth best paid in the SEC, but what does it matter? You know, it's a matter of results and what he's building. And so he's absolutely doing a fantastic job. In fact, we just gave him a raise, right? But it's the trajectory of the program and where we are to where we are when he arrived. And so it's there. We're just not quite having this year we seem to be very unlucky. But I would have told you before that we're trying on the same track you are. You know, we're obviously many, many years behind you. But a lot of the elements that make you great at Alabama are the elements that are getting indoctrinated into the A&M football culture.
You know, building a program is a long-term deal, and you know, almost the microwave society that we look at, and you know, fan bases getting upset and wanting to turn over the coaching staff. It's you know, it's troubling, right? And so with it's hard for a coach to really sort of get their program under them. And so it is good to hear there's an old schoolness to, hey, we see progress. We see it continuing. You know, this may be a little bit of a step back with some specific issues, but the trajectory of the program is where we want it to go. And so it's heartening to hear that those that are in the program are still sort of bunkered in on where it's going and what Jimbo's doing for the Aggies. So that's great to hear.
Yeah. We'll get tested again after what that may look like a third loss in a row here, but everything's going in the right direction.
Yeah. No, that's great to hear. And, you know, wish you guys a great deal of luck after Saturday. Let's get this one out of the way. And then you guys, you know, finish strong the rest of the way. And a lot of times, you know, these hiccups that can happen in the middle of the season, you get on a good run and finish strong. And that's very encouraging for the program, into recruiting, into the offseason, into spring, see where that goes. Not trying to write off this season, but, you know, a good strong finish this year, I think could go a long way.
Absolutely. And you want to close that way. And hey, before we go, I do want to make one appeal to your good Alabama fans. I do want you guys to come to College Station. If you didn't book tickets this year and in 2 years, please make plans because we'd like you guys to travel to College Station and see Kyle Field. We think we have a very unique atmosphere. Again, most people don't know this. At this point, A&M is the largest school in the nation now. So it's a unique place to visit. And we certainly need more Alabama fans to come visit the school and come on game day. Check us out. And we'd love to have you guys.
You know, I've been saying for years that you're probably tired of hearing me saying it, that that is a trip that I want to take. And I do want to take that. It just it seems to creep back up on me. But I need to, with some intentionality, to plan a trip down there, because, you know, it's, you know, I mean, the stadium is beautiful. What you see, some of the architectural sort of features or notes we've incorporated into our expansion. And so there's some stadium similarity, at least as I see pictures of it. And then it's as unique a game day environment as I've certainly seen from a distance.
Well, and that, no one else really puts their student side on the completely one side, right, of the field. And so the students are very loud. The whole ambiance, and come in. Hopefully you come in 2 years from now, and I'll plan to meet you down there. We'll do a midnight yell Friday night before. I don't know if you've seen those SEC commercials. It's kind of funny. You know, run on the A&M games of people at midnight yell. But again, yeah. it's very unique when you're looking at a stadium. So for that first game, right, they filled up the first and second deck, right? And these are people coming in at midnight just for a sort of a yell practice. And it's fun, right? And so, you know, college kids doing things post midnight is not a new thing. But again, having a student body that's standing and yelling the whole game, it's a very loud atmosphere. So it's a lot of fun. It's always revered as one of the top and most feared places to play as an opponent. And so I'd love for the Alabama fans to come visit and check us out.
Fantastic. Well, Chad, I appreciate you joining us tonight. It is always a good time, just personally, when you and I have a chance to catch up, and the family and all. But it's certainly a good time to catch up and talk football as well. Good luck on Saturday, and thanks for joining us tonight.
All right. Take care, and take it easy on us. Don't beat us up too bad, okay?
Take care, Chad.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just to shout out a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out, where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach? Of course. Roll Tide.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.